good morning. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to welcome you all to All Sides Weekend and our book program. I've looked forward to this for a while. We haven't had a book program for a little while, and we're going to talk about summer reads and good reads and new releases, and we're going to be joined by our panelist, Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic and who maintains the blog The Longest Chapter. Kevin Griffith is professor of English literature, creative writing, and everything wonderful at Capital University. He's also a poet. And on the phone is Dan Shaun. Dan, are you there? Do we have Dan Shaun? Dan Shaun, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Terrific. Dan Shaun is with us on the phone. He is the author of a new collection of stories called Stay Awake. Others are called Among the Missing, and he's also a novelist and professor of creative writing at Oberlin College. Thank you, Dan, for joining us.
You're welcome.
I was turned on to Dan Shaun's books by Kevin Griffith, one of our panelists here, and I wonder if Kevin could start in with just a little commentary about your impression of Dan's works while he's on the phone listening to you.
Thanks, Christopher. That's really great. Nice pressure here. I was first introduced to Dan Shaun's work with Among the Missing, which I think is one of the greatest collections of short stories probably in the last 30 years or so. Just a fantastic, fantastic work, Dan. Every single story, I mean, it hits the mark with every single story in that book. And you hit in that collection Among the Missing, your talent is to hit just the right mix of strangeness, sadness, without becoming bathetic, I think, without going over the top. And those stories were so engaging. And I remember I was at a reading and you read the story Safety Man. I think that's the lead off story in Among the Missing, and I think that's just a wonderful story. You should talk a little bit about that story, and I think our listeners would get some sense of what your work is all about. That's just a fantastic story about loss, loneliness, and even redemption to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's a story that was really inspired by a catalog item in Sky Mall, which was a thing called Safety Man, which is a blow-up doll that you can use to, ride around in your car with, or, you put it in the window to scare intruders away or something. And anyway, there's a widow whose mother gives her the Safety Man as a gift, and she becomes increasingly attached to this blow-up doll as she's grieving for her lost husband. So I guess that's sort of the general idea of the story.
Whatever works.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the things that really struck me with your most recent collection was the sense of place in every one of them. I'm thinking specifically of the story St. Ditmas, where you really get the sense of the sort of this arid wasteland these two characters are traveling through. Is that something that's deliberate with you, that you really work to set the scene brilliantly, I thought?
Yeah, I mean, I am really interested in place, and I feel like I get a lot of my sense of tone and my sense of mood from describing place. And for some reason, I guess maybe because I grew up in Nebraska and now I live in Cleveland, I am really interested in kind of dystopian landscapes. I guess besides Cleveland and Nebraska, there's also Portland, mm-hmm. which is, sort of like crawling through miles of dank human hair, and there's Los Angeles, which, as you know, is kind of like Blade Runner, except now. I really like those places, despite finding them kind of scary at the same time.
There's a real sense of kind of a wonderful creepiness mm-hmm. about it. It's almost like Charles Adams was writing down some of his images.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Charles Adams, and I'm glad that you mentioned him, because I would like to have made him proud.
Well, I think you did.
I think so.
Dan Shaun is on the phone from his home in Cleveland. He is the author of a new collection of stories called Stay Awake. Previously, he wrote Among the Missing, Fitting Ends. He's also a novelist and professor of creative writing at Oberlin College. And Cassie Rose is here. Yes, Cassie Rose.
Well, I was wondering with Dan Schoen, if someone was going to start to read your books, which one would you recommend that they start with? Should they start from the very beginning with your first book and work it through, or should they start with your newest book?
I guess I would recommend that people start with Await Your Reply, the most recent novel, which came out in 2009. And I guess maybe because I feel like that's possibly the most accessible of the books, and it seems to be the one that the most people liked.
Oh, interesting.
So,
Do you think it's also because it's a novel and you can get a wider readership with novels?
Absolutely. I mean, it is because it's a novel. Also because it has elements of a thriller, so there's a plot thing that grabs people. So,
Dan Schoen will be joining us for the hour, along with Kevin Griffith and Cassie Rose. And we want to hear from you as well. We're going to talk about some summer reads. And I think everybody has some recommendations. I know Cassie and Kevin come in with bags of books, and they're all on the table now. 292-8513 is the number to call. 292-8513. That's a 614 area. You can also send us an email at allsides@wosu.org or find us on Facebook. Cassie Rose is already handling her books, and I'm going to ask her to start in with one of her recommendations.
I'm going to start with Malarkey by Anacana Schofield. It is one of Barnes & Noble's selections for Discover Great Writers this summer. And Anacana Schofield is a Canadian, and the publisher is Biblioasis, one of my favorite publishers in Canada. It's a book about an Irish woman, and she is the wife of a cattle farmer in very, very, very rural Ireland. And the book opens when she's grieving his death. She's a widow. And you know, though, that something also is going on with her son, who is fighting in Afghanistan. Pretty soon you realize that her son is gay, and she talks about how she discovered that and how he came out to her. And again, this is very, very rural Ireland. So she says to her son that you cannot let your father know. But her son basically flaunts his sexuality, and then the father disowns him. At this point, though, you realize that there's a lot more going on, and you wonder if the son is dead. And part of that is because she's grieving. And if you've ever talked to someone in grief, they do not recall events linearly. And so she is not. And she's trying to figure out and work through all the events that have happened that have led up to the death of her husband and her son.
Okay, when you finish this book, are we crying, or are we? Do we have catharsis? Are we feeling better?
This is a brilliant book, actually, and there's dark humor in it. Her choices of what she does to figure out what is going on. For example, at the same time that she finds out about her son, or that she's wrestling with issues about that, she's approached by a woman in town who says she's having an affair with her husband, a redheaded woman she forever calls Red the Twit. And she decides to figure out what it is about her crocodilian husband that has driven him to an affair. And so she decides to seduce a stranger in the pub. And while he's taking off his trousers, he's giving her marriage counseling. It's kind of dark humor.
This is not my grandmother's Ireland.
No. And it is... You really have to pay attention and keep with it because she's all over the place. And it is very funny. It's dark. It is very wise. It's very energetic. And I have to say also that about two-thirds of the way through, I wondered what was going on. Like, did the father die before the son before the father? And I knew at that point that I had to surrender to this book. It's, you cannot be in control as a reader. And
is that a good thing?
In this book, it is. You need to get on the roller coaster and throw your hands up in the air and give in to the up and down ride.
That's interesting, Dan. Do you, as a writer, try to get listeners to lose control or to control them in your work?
No, I feel like I'm more interested in sort of having a collaborative relationship with readers. That we're both kind of exploring things. Although, at the same time, I do withhold information quite a bit.
There was, for me, there was a fascinating reaction by the author. She read my blog post about her book, and she said, and it was actually her reactions on Twitter and then on her blog. She said, I was the only one, and this fascinated me, that realized it was in County Mayo, Ireland. Everybody else said it was just outside Dublin, and she said that made a huge difference.
That's not outside Dublin, County Mayo, yeah.
Right. Yeah. And the other was, she said that a lot of reviewers were disengaging right at the point where I knew that something was going on and I had to surrender. And she said they gave up.
Surrender is a great word, I think, for if I were a writer, I would love it if someone, mm-hmm. if I surrendered to your book, finally. 292-8513 is the number to call if you'd like to speak to our panelists. I'd really like to have people do is recommend what you are reading now, particularly as the weather gets warmer and the days get longer. Sometimes we read more. Sometimes we read differently. I'm going to ask Kevin Griffith to give us a recommendation as well. Go ahead, you're on.
Oh, okay. One thing I recommended is The Lives of Things by Jose Saramago. Now, this is a fascinating book, and if you're a short story writer like Dan is, I think you'd be really interested in The Lives of Things. Saramago, of course, won the Nobel Prize in Literature about 10 years ago or so. He's from Portugal, Portuguese. And this is an excellent book. It's a collection of about 5 short stories. It's from early in his career. Each of these stories, they're very interesting. They're quite unlike American fiction in that they are not character-based at all. They're more idea-based. And these stories were written in 1979 when he was just getting started. He was a journalist at the time. And these stories focus on the problems of an overreaching government, fascistic overreaching government. But it's done in a very amusing, absurdist way. In fact, one of the stories in this collection is just called Things. And often the characters don't even have names. They're referred to as the civil servant. In this case, the civil servant scratches his hand as he's leaving a room on this door. And they begin to discover that something's wrong with all the things in society, doors, couches. In fact, in one scene, there's a sick couch in a waiting room, and a doctor has to attend to it and give it injections every hour because it seems to have a fever. And the government doesn't know what to do. So in reaction to all the things becoming sick and malfunctioning, the government, of course, forces people, their, of course, response is to impose control on people. And so people have to have certain colored circles embedded on their palms and show those circles to anyone they encounter. And it just gets increasingly absurd from that point. And then the bandage that the civil servant uses to cover his hand to stop it from bleeding, that just dissolves. It fails because it's a thing. And at the end, there's this great panic as how are we going to save him, because he's just bleeding all over the place because society is collapsing around him. He can't show his hand, which has the symbol on it, because it's covered with blood. And so they're very much like that. Saramago's greatest novel, which is well worth a read for the summer, is Blindness. That was a great novel, Blindness. It was made into a movie as well. And he's really good at writing things that border on science fiction, absurdist literature, speculative fiction, while still being a literary giant. I mean, he's just a preeminently great stylist as well.
It sounds like he has the rich imagination and the sense of the absurd that you sometimes find in South American writers.
Oh, yes, definitely,
you know. Yeah, on the very vivid imagination, like in Marquez, Garcia Marquez, and Carlos Fuentes, who's just passed away, right? Mm-hmm. I'm Christopher Purdy. We are listening to All Sides Weekend. We're here. All Sides Weekend Books with Dan Shaun, Kevin Griffith, and Cassie Rose. We're going to ask for your phone calls. We will be back after a very short break. Don't go away.
Checking the weather forecast, a very pleasant task on this Friday, May the 18th. The high today, 81 degrees with lots of sunshine, clear tonight with a low of 56. Tomorrow, sunny and a high of 85, clear Saturday night with a low of 58. And then on Sunday, sunny again and a high of 86. Right now we have 68 degrees at our studios here on the Ohio State University campus.
This is the week that Facebook goes public, and already there's tension between billionaire 28-year-old founder Mark Zuckerberg and the Wall Street tycoons. They don't like the way he dresses. Seriously, though, what do they want? He wore his best hoodie, the one stained with gray poupon. I'm Peter Sagal. You can dress how you like to listen to our radio show, because we can't see you. It's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Coming your way tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock here at 89.7 NPR News. WOSU Public Media presents Chefs in the City 2012 featuring celebrity chef Ira Keller tomorrow at 1 o'clock on WOSU-TV.
We are back. All Sides Weekend Books. I'm Christopher Purdy with Kevin Griffith, Cassie Rose, and Dan Shaun on the phone. Danny, you still there? Still with us?
I sure am.
Terrific. We're going to take a call right now, but then, Dan, I want to ask you what's on your reading table currently. This is Fran in Columbus with a recommendation. Hi, Fran.
Hello there.
Go ahead. You're on.
I don't read as much as I listen to audiobooks in my car, and the last great one was A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Classic.
And so much of it is the reader. It's just fascinating reader. But it's anti-war with a lot of religious overtones. But it's a fascinating character and some humor, dark humor. And I loved it.
I loved it, too. I thank you very much. That's a wonderful recommendation. John Irving's out with a new novel. I haven't started it yet. I do have it at home. It's on my reading table. But I think he's always wonderful, a wonderful writer to return to. That's, you know, he also has that kind of sense of the absurd.
The caller's comment that she said she listens to audiobooks and isn't much of a book reader. I got an interesting letter from someone who said, I love books. He said, I don't read them, though. He said, I read all the book reviews. And he said, I listen to your show. And he said, I feel like, he said, I'm really involved with books. He says, but I suddenly realized I'm not reading them.
Read. Listen
and
read.
He was like, he said, I used to. And he said, what's wrong with me? And
He's a meta reader. He just reads about reading.
He's a 21st century person. Dan, what's on your reading table? Do you have time to read? Dan? Did we lose Dan? Let's see. Well, we'll come back to Dan. We have another call waiting coming in shortly. 292-8513 is the number. Do we have Dan back?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Sort of back.
You there?
Yes.
Okay, tell me, what's on your reading table these days?
Which is great. It's more of a novella than a novel. I also just finished a book by a woman named Kim Barnes called In the Kingdom of Men, which takes place in Saudi Arabia in the 1960s. It's about an American woman and her husband who are in the oil business. And I would kind of describe it as Mad Men in the Middle East, which is, I think, a cool combination.
Mm-hmm. That is a cool, it's timely in some many different ways these days.
Right.
I'm curious about the Toni Morrison book because she certainly gets a lot of press and she's written some marvelous novels. Beloved, I'm thinking Jazz, which I loved, mm-hmm. I thought was brilliant.
And there's a lot of expectation around her work.
Right, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this did look like I haven't read it. It's a small mm-hmm. book. I mean, it's a short, mm-hmm. as he said, it's a novella. Anybody read that yet as well in this room? Or?
No, I have not.
Okay.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, we'll look that for our next program. I think we're probably going to talk about Toni Morrison.
I think you'll find it interesting. I mean, you know, people forget that she's very old. She's in her 80s.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it has the feeling of, you know, like the kind of things that Saul Bellow wrote when he was in his later years. I mean, it's very trimmed down. It's not Beloved or Song of Solomon. It's almost got a kind of a fable-like quality to mm-hmm. it.
And that's an interesting comment, that we do forget that our authors are aging and that when they get to the later years, we still hold the same expectation of them as when
that's
they were
right.
writing in their middle age.
Yeah. It's the same with Philip Roth. Mm-hmm. His novels recently have taken that tone. They become much slimmer and uneven, mm-hmm. to say the least.
The only Roth that I really liked a lot was The Human Stain.
Yeah, that was an excellent book.
Was not a short mm-hmm. book, but mm-hmm. I liked that very much. We have a call from Harvey in Bexley. Hi, Harvey, you there?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I just want to, it's great to hear about books, and I really enjoy it. I wanted to talk about a movie real quick. We're showing at the Drexel at 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday. It's free, and it's called Knocking on the Devil's Door. It's from Gary Null's operation in New York City. It starts at 7:30. I'm actually going to introduce it. My name's Harvey Wasserman, and we'll have a Q&A afterwards. And it's about nuclear power, which I do all my reading on.
Okay. Thank you for that, Harvey. A little off topic, but thank you so much for your call. 292-8513 is the number. We're talking about what you're reading now. We're talking about summer reads. If you have a recommendation for us, please give us a call. Let us know that. You can also send an email to allsides@wosu.org. Cassie Rose has brought with her the recent biography of J.D. Salinger, which to me is very interesting. I've read it, and it sent me to some of his work I didn't know.
Yes, it very much makes me want to revisit his work, but I appreciated Slowenski's summaries, you could say, and analyzations of the work, although it's not overbearing in this biography, but he does also connect it to Salinger's life. What was surprising to me about this, and it just came out in paperback this year, is Salinger's service in World War II. I was not aware of that and was very surprised to learn that he had stormed the beaches of Normandy. He was at the Hertgen Forest, the Battle of the Bulge, was among the Americans, the first Americans to walk into Paris when it was liberated. And much of what I took got out of this biography was that, you know, Salinger really was, we know that he was eccentric and a recluse and all this, but he was almost a sum of his experiences. You know, before I read this, I thought of Salinger as, I framed him in his eccentricity. Okay, he lives alone in Cornish. He fights publishers. He meets people at the front door with a gun.
He stopped publishing, too, didn't he?
Oh, he stopped publishing in 1965.
Right, which was still
talking about him. But what this book revealed to me was that he wasn't just an irrational person. There was an accumulation of events that to me really did build much of his character. I mean, he was at heart private, but all the betrayals by the publishers and the editors who wanted to change the titles on his stories, who promised to publish a short story collection and then reneged on it. Even the very famous story about the verbal agreement to publish The Catcher in the Rye, which was with Harcourt Brace, and then they didn't honor it, which was, you know, the biggest moment in literary history, and of course, Little Brown did. But he believed in the integrity of his work. He believed in the integrity of his characters, the stories. So, of course, he was incensed when editors wanted to, you know, put tawdry covers on his paperbacks and, you know, shorten the stories. And it made me think of what authors are going through now. I mean, do they feel that they need to concede to this because the publishing houses and editors have control over whether or not their work is going to get out there? And was Salinger just in a place where he got fed up and just fought it and was famous enough that he could win?
Dan, is this resonating with you at all as a writer?
I haven't had too much trouble with my covers, but I also don't have too much control over them either. I mean, they'll ask me about, you know, whether I want a certain cover or not. But if they like something that I don't like, they win usually, and that's happened a few times too.
Dan Shaun is on the phone for us from his office in Cleveland. He is the author of a new collection of short stories called Stay Awake. His previous collection is Among the Missing. He's also a novelist, professor of creative writing at Oberlin College. Kevin Griffith is here from Capital University, and our book critic, Cassie Rose. And you're here, 292-8513, or send us an email to allsides@wosu.org. Chris from Westerville is on the line with a recommendation. Hi, Chris.
Hi, yeah, I was just calling in. Actually, I want to make one comment real quick, too, because you guys were talking about audiobooks, and then suddenly Toni Morrison came up. And I just want to say, if you've never heard Toni Morrison read her own work, you've got to do it. It's just incredible. She's a great reader.
Audiobooks are really popular now. I mean, if you go to the library, whole cases are given over to audiobooks. And as people said, they are using them in their car. I want to ask Chris or anybody else out there, Using a lot of audiobooks, does that make you miss holding a book in your hand, or is it six of one, half a dozen of the other?
Well, I wouldn't say it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. I just think it's the best option when you have your hands full of steering wheel.
Yeah. Well, I knew that for crying out loud. We got a witty one on the line.
Yeah. No, let's say you're washing the dishes or you're just hanging out, you know, looking at something, doing bills. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, you got to really have your brain involved in something.
Now, did you have a recommendation for us?
Yeah. Roberto Bolaño, the Chilean author. They just recently published a book of his short stories called The Secret of Evil. And this is some stuff, I guess, they found on his computer after he passed away. And those types of books, you know, you always got to be kind of careful because obviously the author wasn't real keen on getting it out there. But that's, so far, from what I can tell, it's really good. It's really in line. If you like Roberto Bolaño, you should pick it up. If you don't know Roberto Bolaño, you should get familiar with him.
Thanks, Chris, for the recommendation and the pithy remarks. We appreciate it. Thanks for calling. We have Sally on the line with a recommendation. Hi, Sally.
Yes, hello. My husband was an oil painter in Philadelphia, and he did a whole series of paintings based on the works of Franz Kafka. In fact, when we were dating 50-some years ago, he said, "Do you know Franz Kafka?" And I said, "No." But anyway, through his paintings, he was able to put them into a book. And then, like with a country doctor, he wrote a paragraph about it. And in the book that he published, and people commented that now Kafka was, they could understand what Kafka was saying. And this gave my husband he loved Kafka, never met him, of course, but it was for him it was a way of showing in through pictures what Kafka was saying, like the hunger artist, they asked the hunger artist why he never ate. He said, "I never saw anything that I liked." I mean, that's really very profound.
Yeah, yeah,
well, very profound. And a lot of his paintings have been sold now, but people just comment. They say, you know, now it makes sense. I can see what was going on in the story, because sometimes Kafka's hard to follow, and for me, it really just made all the difference. And of course, seeing all the paintings he did, I could visualize, you know, what Kafka was saying.
Sally, we have to move on, but I wanted to ask you, is the book available?
Yes, it is. Copyrighted was in 2004, and you can order it from Ex Libris.
Called the title or the author's name?
Yes, it's The Kafka Series by R.L. Pryor.
Okay, thank you so much. We appreciate that. Thanks for the recommendation. Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
We have Melva on the line from Columbus who has a recommendation for us. Hello, Melva.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
Cutting for Stone by Abraham Verghese.
Yeah.
If I'm pronouncing his last name correctly.
That's a great book. I read that myself.
I've just been enthralled. I haven't gotten to the end, so don't.
I'm not going to tell you,
okay,
no.
Thank you.
But what's grabbing you about that book?
Well, I've been in the Ethiopian community for for a while in the Columbus area, and so reading the book, being able to, he has captured so much of the Ethiopian culture that I have heard from my Ethiopian friends to just the detail, just very meticulous and just a ignites imagination, your imagination as to what's happening historically in Ethiopia in the 40s and 50s. And it's, I will say it's about some twins that were born to an Indian mother and a British physician, a surgeon, and they were Ethiopians by of their ethnicity. And the way he just tells the story about the characters, they pop off the book and how, what motivates them, I've just found it very exciting, and I can't put the book down.
I had the same reaction. I won't say any more, but
please don't.
Thanks for the recommendation, and thank you for the call. We appreciate that very much. Dan Shaun, if somebody wanted to really know what influenced you, who should they be reading?
I would say a couple people. And both of their names begin with Ray. Ray Bradbury is one, and Ray Carver is another.
You have been likened to Carver in the press.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that in some ways I'm a realist, but in other ways I'm interested in elements of fantasy that Bradbury is famous for, and I feel like I've tried to combine the two. This summer there's a book called Shadow Show, which is a collection of stories that are written that are Ray Bradbury tributes. The editor is a guy named Mort Castle, who's a Bradbury scholar, and he asked a whole bunch of people, including people like Margaret Atwood, Bonnie Jo Campbell, Dave Eggers, and so on and so forth, to write stories in the Bradbury mode. And that's a really fun and exciting collection.
Here's an ignorant question for you. Does one have to be a sci-fi fan to get Ray Bradbury?
No, I think he does. I think he's accessible to anybody. And I don't even think of him as primarily a sci-fi writer. He does everything from realistic stories set in Illinois, in rural Illinois, to, fantasies that are, kind of ghost stories, to things like Fahrenheit 451, which is a science fiction book, but which, I think speaks to anybody who's interested in censorship and dystopian future.
Fahrenheit 451 is a scary book even today, maybe especially today. It's still very, very timely. Kevin Griffith, what do you have for us? Give me another recommendation.
Well, we were talking about summer reads, and we're also talking about J.D. Salinger, of course, who has an interesting story as a writer, obviously. I have a book. It's come back into print recently. It was out of print for a while. No Beast So Fierce by Edward Bunker. Edward Bunker, really interesting story, spent 17 years in San Quentin, began writing novels in San Quentin prison, got a typewriter in there and just started typing, wrote about six or seven manuscripts for novels that didn't do anything. And then when he was released, his first novel that was published was No Beast So Fierce. And then it has an introduction by William Styron. William Styron was sort of his advocate. And he says, Edward Bunker is one of a small handful of American writers who have created authentic literature out of their experiences as criminals and prisoners. And No Beast So Fierce is just a gripping narrative. It's the protagonist has just been released from prison. He's put on parole in the Los Angeles area. He lasts about 5 days before he decides, I cannot function existentially in a society with rules. I am what I am, and I'm going to be a criminal. And he decides to go return to his life of crime and just do as much damage as he can until he's caught, basically. And he's one of these criminals who quotes Sartre all the time, Nietzsche, William Blake. So it's a wonderful. Sounds you don't feel so guilty when you're reading
it. Well, there's a Clockwork Orange theme about that.
Sounds like Bukowski too.
You're born the criminal.
Oh yes, it is. It's like Bukowski goes on a crime spree actually. And Edward Bunker he passed away not too long ago, but he's famous because Quentin Tarantino. He inspired Quentin Tarantino's. Reservoir Dogs, and he actually appeared in Reservoir Dogs as Mr. Blue.
I just saw that for the first time last week, Reservoir Dogs, and I missed out a few years ago, and that was a new book. We have to take a break for about 90 seconds. When we come back, we're going to get to your phone calls. Our number is 292-8513. There are a couple of nice people holding. Thank you very much. We'll get to you as soon as we can. Meanwhile, don't go away.
On the next Fresh Air, we listen back to an interview with Donna Summer. She's died of cancer at the age of 63. One of the best singers of the disco era, her hits included Bad Girls, Last Dance, Hot Stuff, and On the Radio. Join us.
Terry Gross and Fresh Air coming your way in about 20 minutes here at 89.7 NPR News. The weather is very pleasant for the next few days, at least according to the weatherman. Sunny today and a high of 81, mostly clear tonight with a low of 56. Then tomorrow, Saturday, sunny and a high of 85. Mostly clear skies Saturday night and sunny again on Sunday with a high of 86. Right now we have 69 degrees at our studios here on the Ohio State University campus. Well, it's time to get off the interstate and enjoy the scenic beauty of Ohio's small towns. You're invited to join WOSU Public Media and the Ohio Humanities Council for a road trip around Ohio. Mondays during Morning Edition, learn about a unique part of the Buckeye State, from Marion to Chillicothe or the neighborhoods of Cleveland to Cincinnati. It's a road trip around Ohio. Listen Mondays during Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News. And if you'd like more information, see visitohiofirst.org. And you can start your morning with NPR's Steve Inskeep and Renee Montaigne on Morning Edition. It comes your way at 5 a.m. on NPR.
We're back. Don't mind us. Cassie Rose was sniffing books. We won't even go there. Terrific talking about books. Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic. She maintains the blog, thelongestchapter.com, which you should check out if you care about books. Kevin Griffith is here, professor at Capital University, a poet and somebody. If Kevin Griffith tells you to read something, read it. Trust me. Okay? Even if it's No Beast.
So fierce.
I mean, which I'm going to read next. And Dan Shaun, the author Dan Shaun, is with us on the phone from Cleveland. We thank all of you for being here. We have Patrick from Gahanna, who's been waiting patiently. Thank you, Patrick. Hello, you there?
Hey there. Thanks.
Sure. Go ahead.
I was just calling. Going to give a recommendation for the author Nick Harkaway, who's John Le Carre's son, The Gone Away World, which was published last year. A sci-fi dystopia, very fun, very light, very quick. One of the great first books I've read from an author. He also has a new book coming out, The Angel Maker, which hopefully is very good. I haven't read it yet.
It's called Gone Away World, right?
Yes, Gone Away World. But, it has a bright pink cover, which I think maybe has detracted from its appeal to its general audience, but it's absolutely phenomenal. If I were to compare it to anything, I'd say it reminds me a lot of Vonnegut's Cat's Cradle, actually.
Ah, okay. Well, thank you, Patrick, very much for the recommendation, and thank you for waiting. We appreciate it. We have Tirza from Hilliard on the phone about Dandelion Wine. Hello.
Hi there. You were talking about Ray Bradbury and summer reads, and I have every summer since I'm 16 years old, I've read Dandelion Wine. Mm-hmm. It's about a little boy in a small town, turn of the century. It's nostalgic, but there's magic in it. It's just wonderful, sweet book.
Thank you
it's
so much.
It's a great book. Yeah.
Yeah, really? Yeah.
You were saying, is Bradbury accessible in terms of people who don't like science fiction? And I think one of the great things about Bradbury is that all his stories are about people first and about characters, and that's what makes him accessible.
I'm glad to know that because, again, I think I was locked in Fahrenheit 451, which scared me then and now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to be a little more creative in selecting my Ray Bradbury books.
Well, did that color your sense about Bradbury or about all of science fiction that it would fear?
I'm not a science fiction person, I have to say, and I'm one of the few people on the planet that just don't really. But you know, that it may be for lack of trying. I may need to go back to that. Could be a summit project for me. But one thing I want to talk about, because you and I, Cassie, both have copies of this book, and I haven't read mine yet, is Nathan Englander's What We Talk About When We Talk About Anne Frank. And since Dan has been likened to Raymond Carver, as has this book, I thought it might be a nice segue.
It was my introduction to Nathan Englander, and I was quite taken with the stories. His style of writing, he's got a little bit of the mythic sense in some of his stories, one of them called Sister Hills, where he compares or writes about a story that you can connect to the settlement in Israel. And it's all about what I think it's about is covenant law and where does it hold and where does it not. And there is in this story a situation where a woman gives her baby to another woman, just quote unquote, sort of gives it just so that her sick baby will get well because she thinks that the spirits are, you know, angry with her. So her baby does get well. And many years later, when the child is an adult, the other woman comes and says, "This is my daughter," to take her. And she says, "Well, no, we were just kidding around." And it was like, no, that is the covenant of law in the Hebrew tradition. Well, it then goes in front of the rabbis. And the way that he presents it, you realize that so much of the settlement issues have to do with covenant law and who belongs where. And he gives you pause to think about really what is going on. But it's not too academic. He's not forcing anything down your throat, or it's not too pompous. It's this gentle, informative, engaging writing. And then again, you'll turn the page and there's a story about a New York lawyer walking down the street, and he happens to walk into a peep show. And he is a he's Jewish also. He's changed his name to be less Jewish-like. And he walks into this peep show. He likes what he sees, puts a coin in to see the girl again, and up come all of his childhood rabbis.
So, for crying out
you know,
loud.
So it's very smart, very funny. And, of course, all the rabbis are there and, you know.
What are they doing in a peep show?
Well, they're talking to him about sexual guilt. And
right.
He plays it back, though. Look what you did to me. You know, yeah. I'm just an innocent, you know, person. And it's a lot of that that could go through all religions.
That would be like seeing Sister Frances Michael.
Exactly.
And me go, oh, my God.
Exactly.
I mean, the very thought has me shuddering. Anyway.
He's really, his writing is beautiful. His concepts are beautiful. I was so taken by this collection, and this rarely happens to me. I put the book down and I went out and I read his novel, The Ministry of Special Cases. In other words, I wanted more of him.
Right.
And that is a wonderful novel that takes place in Buenos Aires during the time of the Dirty War.
Have you read this? Yes, and that was wonderful. Yeah.
Yes.
You kept waiting for the knock on the door.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was very tense that way, but a good tension.
It's a good tension, and he's very able to play off absurdity, and so that you don't feel like it's too off-center, that you can't engage in it, because his characters really sort of do and say and, you know, get employed in some weird ways. Like the father in this novel, he's desecrating the graves of, in this cemetery where all the mothers, the Jewish mothers, were whores. And so their children and ancestors don't want their lineage to be connected to this. So they pay this guy to go in some way scratch the names off the tombstones. It sounds terrible, but it's uplifted. I mean, you realize this is just sort of what he does. And and his son, of course, rebels against him. He keeps taking, it's like taking his son to the job. And his son says, "I don't really want to do this.
I'll take your crayons and your chisel away from you."
Right.
Bury them. Yeah.
But again, it's more of the beautiful writing. It's the insight. His characters are just well-developed, and his scenes are engaging. You laugh sometimes, and other times you just can't put it down because it's so intriguing.
Nathan Englander is the author. Mm-hmm. The short story collection with the intriguing title, a la Raymond Carver, is what we talk about when we talk about Anne Frank. And the novel is The Ministry of Special Cases, which I do remember. And
yes,
that was a riveting read. Dan Shaun, I'm curious, you as a writer, what is the best compliment you can get from a reader?
I think that hearing that they went back, that they read something and then went back and wanted to read more, I think that's a really awesome compliment.
And here's the $10 million annoying question you must get all the time. What are you working on now?
I'm working on a new novel. I just finished writing a screenplay for my previous novel, and that took up a lot of my time, and now I'm back to working on fiction again.
Tell me about the screenplay a little bit.
It's a screenplay for Await Your Reply, which was optioned by a production company called Anonymous Content, and they've done movies like Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind and Babel.
Yeah.
And so they asked me to write the screenplay, and I was kind of excited to do that, and it was a lot of fun. So we'll see what happens.
That's your novel.
With the Hollywood stuff. That's my most recent novel.
That's interesting. What kind of, very quickly, I mean, when you sell the screenplay to your own work, do they then ignore you? I mean, do you give up?
I guess it depends on who it is, and I mean, you do figure that it's a collaborative effort, and that just having written the screenplay doesn't mean.
them.
Up to them.
Up to the director and up to the actors.
So it's likely you could go to the movie theater and be totally surprised by what you see on the screen?
Definitely. Yeah. I'm actually expecting that.
Well, I hope it's
pleasantly surprised instead of, you know.
I hope it's a good, successful surprise and you put your kids through school on that surprise. Thank you. We have a call from Patricia in Gahanna who has a recommendation. Hello, Patricia.
Good morning. As usual, I'm calling to lighten things up a little bit. No offense.
We've been pretty chatty today, I thought.
Oh, come on, guys. Okay. My book is titled My Year with Eleanor, and the author is Noelle, N-O-E-L-L-E, Hancock. And she had worked as a copywriter or at an ad agency in New York, found herself unemployed, sitting in a coffee shop. She saw a quote by Eleanor Roosevelt, "Do something that scares you every day." And since she had like a whole lot of free time, she decided to start doing things what she had feared. And over the course of a year, she took skydiving lessons, deep sea dived, flew a fighter pilot plane, took tap dance lessons, did open mic comedy. It's absolutely fascinating, all the things she'd been putting off and things which she feared doing, although, like, how difficult is it to tap dance? Okay. But
well,
the book is infused with quotes from Eleanor Roosevelt, and there's history about different things Mrs. Roosevelt did. It's really, really fascinating. It's funny. It's just a nice read.
Tell me the author's name again.
Okay, it's Noelle, N-O-E-L-L-E, Hancock.
My Year with Eleanor.
Yes.
Okay, Patricia, we couldn't have a show without you. Thank you very much for your call. We appreciate
okay,
it. Thank you. Bye-bye. 292-8513. I have to ask this of my three panelists, my three guests, and don't anybody yell at me, but I have to ask you, the number one bestseller in America right now on the New York Times fiction bestseller list is
50 Shades of Grey.
What is that? Because
Grey, right?
I'm hearing about that from everybody. I'm hearing it's pornography. I'm hearing all kinds of intriguing things, frankly, about this book.
I'm going to let Kevin take this.
No, two words, schlock sells, right?
That's okay. Well, again, I pass no judgment because I don't know it except what I'm hearing on TV. Danny, you are familiar with...
Well, I know that it is an erotic novel that has a lot of S&M in it, sadomasochism in it, and also I know that it started out as a fan fiction on a Twilight website. So I'm not sure. I'm not exactly sure what the relationship between the novel and Twilight is.
It only
that
gets better.
Characters from Twilight and puts them through the paces.
Okay, then, but I had to bring it up because Patricia's right. We do have to be as timely as well, although most of the books we're talking about are new. And this is the number one bestseller.
It is, and I know a lot of people that are talking about it. I walk into the room, and there's a lot of my friends.
And they see you, and they shut up, right?
Right, that's about it. And they were talking about this, and they're saying they can't put it down, and it also happened with the Twilight series. I think that there's just huge escapism that probably comes into this book, and it's immediate, and people are just, and women are just diving into it like they did Twilight.
It's the Naked Came the Stranger of the 2010s, right?
Oh, good Lord. Okay, well, you know, God bless them all. That's fine. It's a free country. Dan Shaun, we have to say goodbye to you with our thanks for you participating in the program today. You have a lot of fans here of your collections Among the Missing and Stay Awake, and we'll look forward to the movie version of your novel, Await Your Reply.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me.
Thank you very much, Dan Shaun. We have a few minutes left to spend with Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith. We have a few people waiting for calls. there's no sense really in fighting against the bestseller list, is there, really? I mean, you know, I mean, what are you going to do? Write a letter to the editor and
Que sera, sera. Right?
That's right.
Well, and I think that it's a reference list. I think a lot of people who don't know how to make the choices, they go to the bestseller list, which is
I do.
There's,
I mean,
that's not surprising.
That's why they're there. I think.
Well, I think the challenge is that we used to have bestseller lists at the same time that we had independent booksellers, so you could it was balanced. You could walk into an independent bookseller like Three Lives and Company that I often mention, and that's in New York City, tables filled with all sorts of books that are not the bestsellers, that are classics or new books, literary books, biographies, many different presses, small presses, big presses. And you have presented in front of you a world of choices, and you can decide what your choices are among everything. And what happens with the bestseller list is you have 10, 15 books that are what's popular, and it's a very, very limited scope for readers.
Mm-hmm. It's the 80-20 rule. I think that's true. 80% of the people read 20% of what's published.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. We have a call from Nick in Columbus who has a recommendation. Hello, Nick. Nick?
Yes, hello.
Go ahead. You're on.
Yeah, the book I wanted to mention was it's called Reamde by Neal Stephenson. Think Read Me, but with the D and the M transposed. And a fantastic book. Of course, if you're a Neal Stephenson fan, you probably already know, but a lot of people would probably enjoy his stuff but aren't aware of him, so I wanted to make sure and mention it.
Reamde by Neal Stephenson. Tell me a bit about Neal Stephenson.
Well, he's definitely an interesting character. Have you ever read any of his stuff? Or you?
No.
Okay, well, he did a book called Cryptonomicon, which kind of put him on the map. And it's hard to explain. If you're a Pynchon fan, you would probably enjoy him. It's sort of like the historical fiction back and forth with the modern world. Like Cryptonomicon, for instance, sort of went everywhere. You know, the past, the present, computers and you know, World War II cryptography and Alan Turing. And you can't really describe his books. If you describe his books, it doesn't seem like they would make sense. You have to read them to really figure it out.
Well, not Read Me, but Reamde by Stephenson. Thank you so much, Nick, for the recommendation. We appreciate the call. And we have Judy from Columbus, and she has a recommendation for us, too. I'm so glad people are doing that. Judy, hi, are you there?
Hi.
Go ahead. Judy?
I want to recommend a book by Ellen Hildebrand, and she is a frothy author who writes beachy books about beaches. But she wrote a book called Silver Girl, which is the other side of the Bernie Madoff story, and it's about his wife, or supposedly his wife. And it was a very thoughtful book, and, you know, you never really think about what happens to the families of people who do all these horrible, terrible things.
So this is a novel, right? It is
a novel.
Okay.
It is a novel. Yeah, and it's, I read that book, and then I read the book called The Good Father by Jonathan Hawley, I think is his name, which is the story of the 18 months of a father's life after his son assassinates a presidential candidate.
Oh,
so
my
both
goodness.
These books are about the background of the families.
Judy, thank you so much for the recommendations, especially the Madoff suggestion book. I appreciate hearing from you. Thank you for that. We had a little cell phone or issue with Judy, but thank you for the call. We appreciate it. I'm Christopher Purdy. This has been All Sides Weekend Books. I want to throw it back to Cassie Rose and Kevin Griffith for any kind of quick last recommendations.
I'm going to recommend The Paper Garden by Molly Peacock. It's nonfiction, and it's subtitled An Artist Begins Her Life's Work at 72. It's about Mary Delaney in the 1700s, and she, at the age of 72, she began an art project. It was media collage, I think it's what it's called, but her work is now in the British Museum.
Terrific. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Kevin Griffith.
And I'll continue with my Nobel Prize winner cavalcade here. But Thomas Tranströmer, winner of the Nobel Prize in 2011 in poetry. He's from Scandinavia. Thomas Tranströmer. This is a very short collection of his poems, probably one of the best if you want an introduction to his work, called The Deleted World by Thomas Tranströmer. Just came out. I highly recommend it.
And I want to thank Dan Shaun, our guest from Cleveland, who teaches at Oberlin College. By the way, if you're looking for his work, his name is pronounced Shaun, like the man's name, but it's spelled C-H-A-O-N, Dan Shaun. Cassie Rose, thank you so much. We'll do some more summer reads as it gets colder and we get, Patricia will love this, we get even more serious.
Yes, we'll lighten up over the summer with the beach reads.
Yeah, we will. And Kevin Griffith, thank you very much. I'm Christopher Purdy. My thanks to Charlie Pickard, who ran the board for us and produced, and to Katie, who answered the phones with her patience and charm. Thank you for that. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.